News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of May. Anno Domini 2004.
The Scuzzy of May.
The Scuzzies of May 2004, and you lucky people, you are listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Tony Placilla.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And we are going to be bringing you an hour's worth of news, views, and stuff you can use. And then, hoo-hoo, Yankee baseball. Assuming they don't get rained out and we're here till 5. Who knows?
We could do that.
Spawn in Spain and pray for rain.
Exactly. As you heard, we have the magnificent Hannah with us today. The indomitable Rob Linton.
Yes,
is off becoming a master.
Yes, we got to congratulate him. He's graduating and getting his master's degree, I believe, from Fisher today.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck, Rob.
In pottery.
Was that his major?
He likes throwing his pots.
Yeah. I'm just starting the... simulcast thing here now. So
well, when we get in here, and then, you know, we got in the studio, and
that's
then
right.
They said, well, you got 2 minutes to set up.
Hannah's
sitting there watching
us. It's not like, I'll throw an extra commercial, I'll do something. You have 2 minutes, you have an hour
impressed.
And a minute and 30, you have a minute and 10.
I was very impressed. You guys set up very quickly. And
we're here. We're
right
up.
Under pressure.
Yeah. Well, it's the longest time is booting the computers. Thank God I don't have Longhorn. I would have had to start at 4 a.m., let's head to the... and of course, our esteemed colleague and guest of the day is the magnificent Tony Placilla, who is our Linux guru. Linux son and so many other things, but...
Officially guru now, too.
You're officially a guru. It's exactly right. Do you want to speak to that?
No, it's not. It's a certification, but it's a real one.
It's a real one, and there are a lot of certifications out there, and some are real.
Yeah, I picked up a Red Hat certification 2 months ago. I went down there. It was possibly the single toughest test I've ever taken in my life.
Sure.
Yeah.
Including the urine test you took to get into the Army.
Yeah, that one, too. You know, now, yeah. It was great. Friday morning, you get in. It's broken. Fix it. You get a list of about 18 things that have to work, and you get 2 hours to do it.
Yep.
Mm.
Oh, and you're thinking to yourself, well, that's luxurious. Normally, it's got to be fixed yesterday.
That's right. But boy, they break them hard, let me tell you.
Yeah, I bet they do. Let's start with the news, and we'll start with Tony.
Yeah. A couple of interesting things happened. This is mostly in the Windows world. You know, virus writers need to open source their code a little bit more, Nick.
Yeah.
The Sasser worm that everybody's heard of and has been... You know, Microsoft's Sasser repair download site has been, like, creamed for the past 48 hours. Turns out that, oh, my God, there's a flaw in the code that exploits the flaw.
Wait, there's a flaw in the worm.
There's a flaw in the worm. What Sasser does, amongst other things, is put up an FTP server on a non-standard port to listen for stuff so that the writer of the virus could, you know, stick a DDoS tool or a auto-spamming tool or something like that. Well, there's a surprise. There's a flaw in the FTP server that he wrote. So there's a new worm out there called Dabber. And Dabber targets Sasser computers, exploits its flaw, goes in, uploads itself, and then the best part about it is it says, take Sasser away. Like, you fool, this is how it's really done.
Right.
So,
we've always thought that the first person to actually write the virus is the smart one and knows the codes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the script kiddies for the next 20 generations that don't know anything. And the bad programming is worse than the virus.
See my weekly Microsoft rant about bad programming.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you got, yes.
Exactly. And the other nice thing, and this is actually a little bit more important and more serious, anybody that's using, you know, we mentioned on the show Norton Antivirus or Norton Firewall, along with, you know, the McAfees and the Zone Alarms and things like that, and Norton generally had put out pretty good tools. Well, there's a flaw, and this is bloody serious, in the all the internet security utilities, the ones that include Antivirus and Norton Firewall and the SafeSurf, anything that has to do with their internet, its core component code,
right,
that if an attacker sends one specially crafted packet on port 135 all your base are belong to us. It, it takes over and runs as system level.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're all done. So if you have any Norton tool whatsoever, you needed to update this yesterday.
Yeah.
This is critical.
Yep. It's very important to update instantly, if not immediately. Steve.
Yes, we had a very odd... excuse me, I'm all choked up about it. Had a very odd and annoying thing happen again this week in the Mac world. In Tego...
yeah, some sort of virus hit you.
Well...
excuse me, worm.
Sort of.
Trojan.
Well, they're saying it's such a stupid little thing that calling it a Trojan is a stretch of the term. Some idiot...
probably not just one guy who admitted to it.
Downloaded a file off of a peer-to-peer network named Microsoft Office 2004. Well, one, it's illegal to download it. Two, it hadn't been released yet. It only started shipping this week. And three, it was only 100K. That should have been your first clue. The Microsoft Office 2002 demo that Microsoft themselves publish on their own website, which is the only place you'd find it, is 150 megs.
You're right.
God, so that's a Project Emacs.
Yeah. So 100K file. Turns out it's a Trojan horse claiming to be Microsoft Office 2004, and it's just nothing more than a simple Apple script that moves some files around on your hard drive. It's very...
No. It doesn't move anything around on your hard drive. Well, you call putting it in the trash.
Right. It can move the files in your home folder to the trash. It's nothing more than a bat file that's been around in Windows for 20 years. Mm-hmm. If you move your files to the trash, you may lose your data.
You may.
Usually works that way.
So the net is all in an uproar. In fact, a lot of people are now, you know, writing their own so-called Trojans, saying, you know, I can write something and name it, you know, Microsoft Office 2020 installer. Here's an advanced public preview. And
they're missing the point. The point is, it's just as easy to write a Trojan under OS X as it is under Windows, because it has a back-end scripting language.
Right. Mm-hmm. But you still have to enter your administrator password to run it.
To run it as an administrator.
To run it, period. Even if you are an administrator on the Mac, if you're logged into an admin account, you still have to enter your password to install software. If you're not logged in as an admin account, you have to enter your admin password.
No, I don't mean to install software, but to run an Apple script.
The download installer is going to ask for your password.
Oh, okay.
Well, so it's like that other virus that's out there now. I think it's called Keylog. And what it does is gets onto your machine, and it literally sits in the background and captures all the key codes that you typed in. Oh, like bank information and everything else, sends it off back to the person that wrote the virus, and they can get all your, personal information.
Yep.
So it's a real annoyance that things like this. Well, we've never said that you couldn't write a virus for the Mac. We just said it was a little harder, and the security codes are a little harder to get through on the Mac. But you know, for someone to just write a bat file saying, you know, move files to trash, it's ridiculous. And what we're most annoyed about is that Intego is really touting this up as a reason to buy their software.
Yeah.
Just like they were saying on the last year, you better buy our software. We're the only one that can protect you against this nasty new Trojan.
Sure.
Don't download files from peer-to-peer. Don't assume a 100K file could be, you know, a giant application.
You know, the reality is you cannot cheat an honest man.
Yep.
You can only cheat greedy people.
Mm-hmm.
You can only cheat people who are looking to get something for free.
Yep.
Simple fact, simple reality.
Well, it is.
If it sounds too good to be true, it is.
It
and
is.
If you didn't create it, you cannot make a copy of it.
That's right. Dave.
Okay, unless you've been living underneath a rock, you know that the Sasser worm that we've been talking about, and it is literally a worm, folks. Unlike the rest of the viruses out there, this one, all you had to do was be on the internet. I had one client does dial-up.
Yep.
And her laptop was totally trashed. It got in there, and she got the D and the E version, which just totally messed up her machine. But it was an 18-year-old kid. You ready for this? He was trying to help his mom's computer business.
Yeah.
I think he just destroyed his mother's computer.
Yeah, it's really unlikely that anybody is going to go to their parents now for a computer fix.
You know, I mean, that
poor it's sad for them because they had nothing to do with it.
Exactly, but she's going to suffer,
yep.
You know, because her son was the one that released this and, you know, brought all this devastation and mayhem, have you, to the computer mm-hmm. world. The other thing is Microsoft, sit down, folks, found another flaw. They announced it on May 12th. This one happens to do with the Windows Help and Support Center. Now, if you're familiar with, if you're running into an issue, it runs you through all this diagnostic and help and recommendations of trying to solve a problem. Well, they have a patch for it. And this is one thing I can't say enough. I have, just this week, because of the Sasser and what, the other patch was out months ago that would have blocked this Sasser. But a lot of folks get on there and they see the notice because Windows XP will automatically come up and say, oh, there are critical updates there. Do you
want to have new updates available ready to install right now?
And a lot of folks sit there and say, click on it and say, yeah, I'll get to it later.
Remind me later.
Yeah, remind me later or no, go away. Well, you've got to take the time to do those because Microsoft is doing their best to try to, you know, get around these holes. I mean, this is an issue because of how wide the World Wide Web has grown. These hackers and everything else, which, again, I can't stress enough, are all third world country. I mean,
When's
the last time you've heard of a worm or a virus coming out of the U.S.?
Right.
It's all been third world country.
Outsourced. We call it outsourcing now.
Yeah. In the defense of novice computer users, it's very difficult to tell the difference between a legitimate Microsoft message that pops up on your screen and says you've got an update,
right.
And all of the annoying pop-ups you get, you know, trying to sell you stuff. I love the ones that claim to be, you know, security updates. Your computer's not secure. Click here, and it turns out to be an ad to buy a security program. Well,
yeah.
At the least, if you know, at the worst, right. It's a spy program. So for novice users, it's hard for them to know what's real.
Well, the thing that is if they are unsure, they can always just, you know, instead of clicking on the email that takes them to a site, they can literally open up their browser, type in Microsoft.com, go to the updates, and write officially from their website. If they have any hesitation, go directly to the site, click on updates. It will say the operating system and lead them to the patch.
The worst are the phishers, though, the people who are doing phishing, P-H-I-S-H.
Yep. Yep.
There's a recent one out now, U.S. Bank. You get a message that says, U.S. Bank found error, please resubmit. And what happens is you get this message that looks quite convincing, although it carries no U.S. Bank logo. The subject is a little messed up at the end, which is typical spam technique.
Is there a bank called U.S. Bank?
Yes, there is.
The Citibank is usually targeted, too.
Citibank has been targeted as well. U.S. Bank is targeted. This is the best part, though. The link seems okay. It's pretty familiar to U.S. Bank customers. The sender looks right. So you think, okay, I've done my little due diligence. I'm good to go. So you go there. Then you get what looks like a legitimate U.S. Bank page. But normally,
all they do is copy the graphics off of the real page.
They're actually pulling them off the real page. Now, what happens is, normally you would think, okay, I look up at the URL in the location field there at the top of the screen, and it says, okay, it's not.
A lot of folks hide that.
Well, here, this one actually uses a JavaScript code to put up a graphic of the location code with a legitimate address in it and puts it over the real location thing. You can click in it. You can do whatever you want to it. It looks like the real one.
Whoa.
This assumes that you haven't moved yours somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
So then it says, okay, now, and they don't even ask you for any information at this point. They ask you to just continue, you know, next.
Yep.
And you go next, and it puts up yet another new graphic. And with a legitimate address in it, and now it starts asking you for personal information. What you need to remember, folks, is that at no point is your bank going to ask you, send you an email message saying, go here and enter your personal information.
Right.
They already know it.
They already have your personal information.
Let's expand that. No legitimate company of any sort whatsoever is
ever going
to do that.
Right.
If they don't update their password, they don't need to verify their password. They can't.
There was an issue on eBay where they wanted everyone to change eBay themselves wanted everyone to change their eBay ID because most people enter their email address as their ID number, and that allowed the web crawlers to accumulate addresses for junk mail. So it was a very tough sell for them. They emailed all their users saying, "Please log into eBay and change your username." So how do you distinguish that?
Well, by not providing a link.
Right.
Saying, go to eBay.
And if mostly people that aren't on eBay much missed the message because eBay had it all over their front page forever.
Right.
So the heavy eBay users already knew this and changed it. Right. But I use eBay maybe once or twice a month, and so I got this email, and it looked suspicious, and I ignored it.
Right.
And then I got another one, and
Looked at the front page,
went to the eBay page, and found it was legitimate. So
right.
It's getting tough for real companies to do business like this now.
We have to take a quick break. Before we do, though, I just want to say that Rob Linton called in. His master's is from Oswego, he wants us to know, in vocational education.
Pottery was his minor.
Wait a minute. Vocational?
Because apparently they don't offer basket weaving. Vocational education.
What did that teach you?
That allows you to teach at, like, BOCES.
Yeah.
You can teach vocations.
Or you can teach technical trades.
Vocation, not vacation education. Vocation.
Well, I thought it was vacation because, yes, you know, he goes here, he goes
because he's sitting around here, Hannah, working hard. You can see it. Rob just sits there with his feet up, snoring in between calls. It's terrible.
She's running her little head off here.
We just ended it because he's not here this week, but he will remember this for next week. We're going to take a quick break.
Rob noticed I didn't say a word.
Tony's trying to suck up. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tony Placilla, the magnificent Hannah, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Contact the guys the old-fashioned way. Use your telephone and dial 222-1180 or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Welcome back to Soundbites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Tony Placilla.
And I'm Hannah Jacobs.
And you're listening to Soundbites. Our first caller today is Cal from East Rochester, New York. Welcome, Cal. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
My computer's okay. It's my sister-in-law's that screwed up.
Yeah, they all say
that.
We
hear that all the time.
You know, I'm the guru in the family, so I'm trying well. Not
are you lucky?
Guys,
which means you don't have to call us.
Yeah.
Because I can't figure it out.
What's the problem?
Well, she's got Frontier DSL, was running a USB, and I had been meaning to get over there to put the firewall up for the free one, one of the free ones.
Right.
And I hadn't got over there, and her daughter did something, and it was just displaying numerous stuff on the screen independently running. So I shut it down, tried reinstalling the Frontier stuff to the USB, and it does not detect the modem. So I'm thinking, okay, it screwed up the USB drivers. So I deleted those and reloaded them off the CD. She's running Windows ME.
Ow!
And that was a blast by itself.
We've had to take away Dave's mic again. He'll get it back when he gets over his little fit.
So then I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to install a network card. So I did that, a Netgear card, brand new out of the box. It still doesn't talk to the modem. It comes up with a detecting modem thing, and it fails.
Have you, all right.
Well, it shouldn't detect the modem on the Ethernet port. It just should see it as a DHCP server.
I believe you're confusing modem with modem.
Yeah.
It's probably trying to detect, and may even in fact be detecting, a real modem in the computer.
The analog modem.
A phone line modem.
I deleted the dial-up modem adapter. That's the first thing I did.
There's a virus.
And it's trying to reinstall it, though.
There's a virus out there called Autodialer. And what Autodialer does is tries to go to your modem, redial, and go to all these great porn sites.
And long-distance phone numbers.
Before you
900 phone numbers.
Right. Yeah. Before you do anything else, you really need to dance the security tango.
I have done all that. That's the first thing I did, actually. I ran Spider.
Stinger?
Stinger, AdAware, and SpyBot. And it found, like, over 800 things.
Yeah, bet.
And I ran them like twice because it was finding stuff.
Yeah, but once you get rid of the, Stinger, all that does is catch 41 of them. What you have to do is...
Of the worst ones.
Yeah, of the worst ones. It'll stop you from installing an antivirus program. Once you get that in, then you've got to put in a good virus program and run that because, I mean, we've been finding ones like, I mentioned before in the news, Keylogger. Keylogger, what it does is it tracks all your keystrokes and sends it off to the individual so he can collect it. There's we've seen three or four new ones, so you want to definitely do that also.
Yeah, you want to make sure that you're actually running a real antivirus program to catch all the rest.
And AVG makes a nice
free one. She's got McAfee, and we upgraded that, and that found a bunch of stuff as well.
But when you
how did you upgrade it if you can't get on the Internet?
I did it on my PC and took the update over to her machine on a CD.
Okay.
But what could be happening is when you're rebooting the machine, it's trying to redetect and reload your analog modem. The digital modem, which is actually a DSL router, they're using the term modem because everyone knows it, but it's a router, not a modem.
Right, it's a speed stream.
Right. When you connect that through Ethernet, it acts as what's called a DHCP server, and there is no detection of any type of modem necessary for that. If the speed stream isn't working, you'll get a DHCP server not found error. Is there
The Frontier CD, it says detecting modem, and it gives some error.
Oh, your Frontier CD. Right.
Yes.
The Frontier CD detecting modem is trying to find it over USB. You don't need any Frontier software if you're running over Ethernet.
Right.
Because all of the Ethernet drivers are built into Windows.
Right. So you just put the card in, turn the machine on.
It might ask you for the drivers of the card.
Of that card, and if so, you got a disk with the card. Then
there were drivers that came with the card, which installed fine.
Okay.
Great. Now, when you connect, do you get an error message?
Yeah, when I'm because I
not you're running the Frontier stuff, but just turning your machine on.
I went to the My Programs and deleted the Frontier stuff and started over.
Okay.
And that's one of the things. You know,
take the Frontier stuff out.
Ignore the Frontier CD now.
Right. What error message do you get without the Frontier stuff?
None.
Then you're on. Did you try connecting to the Internet?
Yeah, and it says it gives that blank page error where you can't find any, you know, it's some standard.
All right, here's another thing you might want to try.
Whoa, that's a whole different problem, and that may be because you've got a proxy. The Frontier people may have set up a proxy inside your system.
They do.
And one way to get rid of it is if you reboot and go into safe mode, and you uninstall your TCP/IP.
You don't really need to do all that. All you need to do is go into the control panel, go into networking, go to the proxy settings and remove them. Say no proxy.
But
that should do it.
But what you know where it also stores it, though, and the other thing we found we've had to do is also go into the registry and delete WinSock 2. Because that's what the WinIP fix does, is it literally deletes the WinSock 2 folder. So when you reboot, it automatically recreates them fresh. So sometimes it can hold those things. So that's why I say get rid of the... like you said, but then you also have to go into the registry and search for WinSock 2 and delete those two. There's going to be usually two folders with WinSock 2, and when you reboot, it will recreate them with no settings in it.
Okay, give that a try, Cal. I'm afraid we kind of have to move on here.
How do I get into the registries on ME?
Just go to Start, Run, and type RegEdit.
Okay.
And be very, very careful in the registry.
So just look for the two WinSock things and delete
WinSock
those.
WinSock 2.
WinSock 2.
It's the number 2. One string.
One string, yeah. Okay, thanks. Our next caller is Dick from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm an older computer fan, let's say, and this is my first time I've listened to you. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I've got a 400 iMac, and I'm thinking of moving up to a flat-screen iMac. And when I listen to you today, I'm boggled. How the hell does a person like me that wants to become computer proficient know how to deal with all of these things that you fellows were talking about? Do you have a newsletter or something that goes out that can...
Well, first we have a website.
You have a website.
Soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can go there and you can join the forums and talk to all kinds of people about all kinds of stuff all day long. Great people out there. I'm just can't wait to finish this quarter and get back into forums.
Then one of the best places is the Apple Users Group.
Yeah.
We
have a past president and a current board member.
Yeah, I'm the quartermaster this year.
Quartermaster, which is one-fourth of Rob Linton, is what you're saying. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the Apple Users Group, and our website is applecider.org, APPLECIDER.
Apple Cider?
Mm-hmm.
Regular Apple Cider?
Yep. And our the phone number is 251-APPLE, We actually have a meeting today for beginners. It should be starting about 1 o'clock at Visual Studies Workshop, which is at the corner of Prince and University. We have monthly meetings, second Wednesday of the month, question and answer session, presentations. We had a really neat presentation this week from an Eastman School graduate on music and all the neat things they're doing with music. Mm-hmm. And that's the users group is a great place to meet people, to get questions answered, and to find
Fantastic.
Out things. And then there's several good book series that you can buy as well. Anything by David Pogue is wonderful.
Anything by O'Reilly?
Books, you mean?
Pardon?
The Dummies books?
The Dummies books are nice. David Pogue has got a series called The Missing Manual.
Mm-hmm. That's a great book.
That's a great series. Jim Hyde has several on the iLife programs for the digital photos and digital video. And that's real big now in the newer Macs.
What you're basically seeing is with any of us, we all had mentors that taught us what we know.
Yeah.
So what you do is need to find a mentor. And these are your mentors, the users groups, the online support people.
Sharing ideas.
When I was in college, my professor was at RIT a week ahead of us, learning the stuff he was teaching us. Because, 20 years ago, all these computers were new.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's where you start out, I think, at your best bet. And the good news is, with a Mac, you're already, way ahead of the crowd. A lot of the virus problems, a lot of the upgrade problems that other people have, you don't have.
Is that right, regardless of the age of my Mac?
No, I'm talking about if you get a new one.
Oh, all right.
But regardless of the age, too, the fact that it is a Mac protects you from 99% of the problems on the Internet.
Right.
One other question, and I'll get off your case here. What do you think of the flat-screen iMac?
They're very, very nice. The big question is, do I have enough money to buy the 20-inch?
Yeah.
Because they're available in 15, 17, and 20-inch. And the 20-inch is just a gorgeous screen, especially if you're going to watch movies. If you already have a big-screen TV and a DVD player, then that's fine. But watching DVDs on the 20-inch screen is really nice.
Let me put it this way. As Nick is well-known, I'm a Linux bigot. My next new PC is going to be a Mac.
Yeah, I know. They're gorgeous.
I love them from what I've seen of the PCs, and I don't know that much about them, and that's what bugs me when I listen to you guys with all of the phraseologies, the terminologies,
most of that stuff, you don't have to know. As a Mac person, you don't have to know it.
And if you want to, you can get computer dictionaries are really great. There's also a website, whatis.com. It's an IT dictionary.
Computer dictionary, is that something that you can buy in the...
At the bookstores, yeah.
Or you can go to whatis.com and read, any term you don't understand, put it in and it'll tell you.
Or do a Google search for the jargon file.
There's a really neat Mac Windows phrase translator. Translates, HFS into fat.
Right.
Or one other thing I would suggest that he does is, since he is a new listener, tune us in a little more often. And be totally boggled.
Learn by osmosis.
Yeah. You know what? It's true. You listen the first time, you're completely boggled, but as time goes on, you learn it all. It's just a matter of being exposed to it.
In another 15 years, we'll be really...
we'll know what we're talking about.
You'll be great, and I'll still be 4 years behind you. That'll be good.
But you'll still be 10 years ahead of everybody else. We have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tony Pulsilla, Hannah, and me, Nick Francesco. All of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Tony Pulsilla.
And I'm Hannah Jacob.
Okay, it goes kind of in order, Hannah. Before we get any farther, I want you to know next week the Yankees game is on at 4, so we'll be on at our regular time. The week after that, it seems to be on at 6:15, so we'll still be on at our regular time. And in June, it looks like not until the 26th.
We're back to normal.
Right, so for the next few weeks, we'll be mildly consistent at our regular time. Before we go on back to the phones, I do have a couple of announcements I want to make. I should let you know that this is your last two chances to see Snoopy at the School of the Arts. My suggestion, of course, personally, I believe you should go on Sunday, because the young lady who plays Lucy on Saturday is phenomenal, I personally believe that the young lady
Sunday
who plays
is
Lucy
gonna be
on
better.
Sunday, it will be it
What
will
would be her name?
And I'm making sure her name would be, and is, in fact, Amelia Rose Francesco.
Ooh, congratulations.
He's playing Lucy. It's going to be it's a fun show. It really
How
is.
How long has this been running? It's been running.
It's only two weekends.
As you say, this second weekend?
Yeah, this is it. This is
so
our
this
last
is
chance.
Your last chance.
Sunday
though.
Night, last chance to see Amelia in this particular role. It's a fun show. It's only $5 to get in. So,
for a good cause.
But it's a great cause. The school there is a phenomenal
kids.
Place. Great people. We do a poll
across
every
across the street from the Visual Studies Workshop, where the Apple meeting will be starting soon.
Where there is. So if they just stay for another 24, 36 hours, they'll be good.
Yeah.
We do a poll every week. Last week's poll was, should Microsoft provide patches for bootleg copies of Windows? 382 of you voted, making it number 24 on the all-time hit list. I'd like to thank you all. The majority of you, 59% of you, said no, let them suffer. Oh, so only 41% said yes, it'll protect the rest of us. This week's poll is about waiting. It's about waiting. People have been talking about Longhorn, and other friends are talking about the next kernel release for Windows, for Linux, and people are talking about it. And I thought, you know, what are you waiting for? The choices being here, XP Service Pack 2, which should come out sometime before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Longhorn, which should be out sometime in Hannah's lifetime, perhaps not ours.
Right about the same time Doom 3 is released.
Yeah. Did you see
Nukem 3? Excuse me.
No, that might
Doom
be out
3
sooner.
Coming. The trailer's out and it's gorgeous.
It is. Oh yeah.
It's gorgeous. Longhorn is the next choice. Kernel 2.8, which would be the next release version
next
of the kernel.
Major version release. Yeah.
The other choice is Steve Jobs to sell me something insanely great again.
Well, Tiger will be previewed in June at the developers conference.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was like Tiger or Alley Cat or Abyssinian. I couldn't remember the name. And then other, please leave an opinion. That's the poll this week. So far, of course, we've had 73 of you vote, and XP Service Pack 2 is leading, with other, please leave an opinion behind it. Once you have voted, please go down to the little yellow box under it, click on the leave an opinion link. That'll take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. And you'll be able to leave your opinion as well as see what I've got on my website. Usually the people just snipe back and forth about whether Windows is the Mac is good or bad, and that's kind of boring. But this week there were actually some really good things. The very first opinion that was left was Godot, which I found hysterically funny.
Mm-hmm.
That probably was you, wasn't it? I knew it would be. I was going to do it, but I couldn't stay up. I'd been to Snoopy, and I was tired. A couple of them were pretty good, actually.
The current generation would be Guffman.
Yeah, right. The current generation would be Guffman. I actually was the title character in an off-Broadway production of Waiting for Godot. They actually put my name in the credits as Godot. I got a call from somebody and said, how can you be in two shows at once? I said, what? So I was doing an off-Broadway show at the time. I said, what? And he said, well, you're, because the union guy called me up, you know.
Yeah.
And wanted to know why I wasn't paying dual dues or whatever, you know, what's going on.
But did you get paid twice?
No. Well, I said, what am I in? He says, you're in Waiting for Godot. I said, what character am I playing? He said, Godot. I said, hello. How long have you been in theater? Oh, yeah. Okay, I get it. Okay, thank you.
Duh.
Hello. Nothing against union guys in general, but he was not the brightest bulb on Broadway. Let's just put it that way.
Half a bubble off plum, you say?
More like you fried short of a Happy Meal. But please vote and join us in the mayhem on the Soundbites forums. You'll find lots of fun and interesting things there. We're going to go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Well, I'm not a totally capable person with the software, but I had a virus, and I took it to a very reputable person to fix that for me, and we had to reload Windows 2000 Professional to solve the problem,
mm-hmm.
and everything was fine, but after I went to use a couple applications, they wouldn't work. One of them was PayPal, and so I took it back again, and they fixed that. Well, then I have another personal application, which is actually, I guess it's a game, but it's a real flight radio control simulator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that one, I can't get it to work, and it worked fine before, okay?
Have you reinstalled it completely?
Oh, yeah. I've been on their software, people, and on the telephone for 45 minutes. And
what error message do you get?
Well, what I get now is the thing loads and it looks like it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you try to start it up, it loads files, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get a message that says the procedure entry point, DD entry 1, could not be located in the dynamic link library GD132.dll.
Have you installed the Windows 2000 patches? SR1, SR2, what are they up to now in 2000?
They're SR4.
Four, because the game may require a certain service release level.
To tell you the truth, I don't know.
The last major critical one.
Yeah, if you go to if you go into the control panel, click on system, it'll tell you what service pack you're on.
To what was that again, control panel?
Yeah, go into your control panel, click on system, and that'll tell you, one, you know, what version you're running and what service pack you're running.
If it doesn't say any service packs, then you aren't running even service pack 1.
Right.
Okay.
You need to put your service packs in. The other thing you might want to do is check your video driver.
Okay.
About 90% of the problems people have with games is because the video driver isn't set right.
Okay.
And again, you may want your shop to take a look at that, but they should have loaded the correct driver for your video card.
Yeah. I think that's all okay. I really do.
To be specific, that GD132DLL error is also breaks other games. It is video card specific. It is
a lot of games will like to reload their own video driver to get better performance.
It sounds from
it
what Tony
DirectX.
Found.
It does actually use DirectX.
You need to get on some of the service releases to upgrade DirectX. Definitely.
They're up to 9 now, is it, for DirectX?
Yeah, they're up to DirectX 9, but you need some of the higher service packs in order to even load DirectX then load your video card driver again.
Yeah, it's actually related to the help file system is what it breaks. That helps, but it's definitely a video card driver issue.
Yep, there you go. Okay. So update your service releases and reload your video driver.
We'll give it a go.
Go for it.
Thanks.
Our next caller is Bill from Sackett's Harbor. In heaven's name is Sackett's? Oh, wait. Tony knows because it's got to be somewhere down the Finger Lakes.
No, it's off on the coast of Lake Ontario. Like I said, south of Watertown, just past Oswego.
How do you spell Sackett's?
S-A-C-K-E-T-S.
Nice. With an apostrophe?
No.
Oh, just like there's more than one Sackett out there in the harbor.
Well, whatever. There's no apostrophe.
Okay, got it. Up near Watertown.
Yeah.
And Augustburg.
Normally, I reside in Leroy, but in the summertime, I'm up here.
Cool. Sure, well, I'll be up to join you.
Good. You're welcome anytime.
I'll be up that way in a few weeks near Lake George.
Yep.
Good for you. What's your story here, Bill?
I got a problem with Mozilla. You know, I listen to you guys occasionally anyway, and it sounded pretty good what you had to say about it. So, okay, I went to their website and downloaded it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it all down here. But I can't do a thing with it. You know, I got Welcome to Mozilla 1.6, About Mozilla, Endless FAQs, How I Can Donate, you know, Contact Us. They want $40 if to tell you anything. You know, do I have to reload Roadrunner or something like that? Because it still comes up with Explorer, even though I've told it that's not my default browser. It'll say Explorer is not your default browser. Do you want to change it? And it doesn't matter whether I do or not. I still get Explorer.
Well,
I'm just wondering how to light this thing off and make it work.
Well, but it works. You can actually get to websites and stuff.
I get the website, but it doesn't do anything.
One of the things that you should be able to do is go into the Tools menu,
mm-hmm.
select Options,
uh-huh.
go to General.
Let's see. I'm doing that right now.
Oh, you're in
Mozilla you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I'm in Firefox. You're in real Mozilla.
Edit Preferences.
Because I don't see
edit,
any
yeah,
options.
Edit Preferences.
Say again?
You've got it there in front of you,
I've got it in front of me. I'm just trying to see. I don't use anything other than Mozilla, so I really don't know.
There should be a button that says make it your default.
Well, in Windows, too, if you open the Internet Control Panel, there's a default programs option.
Yeah, Internet setting.
Yeah, that's what you really need.
You know, I've been to the control panel and, network and...
No, have you checked the Internet options?
Is this in Windows or in Mozilla?
In Windows.
Okay.
If you go into Windows, you go into the control panel, go to Internet options. One of them is, I forget which tab it is, but it will...
Programs,
you,
I think.
Yeah, programs. Yeah. It'll let you set up your default web page.
Well, it may be already set to Mozilla, because if you launch Internet Explorer and it says that Internet Explorer is not your web browser, then it is set to Mozilla.
I'm in Internet Options right now in general.
Yeah, there's a Programs tab where you tell it what your Internet program, what your browser is, what your mail program is, what your news program is.
And I've been there, and, you know, I put in my email as, I forget what it is in Mozilla.
That's all right, but
what is an HTML editor? That's the first thing they...
But that's if you wanted to edit your own web pages.
Oh, okay.
You can skip that.
Yeah,
my version doesn't have that because we don't have the option of it.
Right, so but when really what you're looking for is...
When you open Mozilla, you don't get a web page.
No, right? I don't. Well, I get a web page, yes.
Right. Well, you can change
it. It's not a web page that I can go anywhere on the web from.
If you type in the title bar, can you type like google.com and get somewhere?
There should be a little
never
white.
Tried that.
Right,
try that.
That's what you need to do.
That's how every browser works. You type an address of someplace you want to go.
Where do you want to go?
Well, normally my home page, I go to the New York Times.
Okay. Then you can go up to the top in that white little bar and type www.nytimes.com.
Oh, okay.
Hit enter.
All right, if you want to set your default home page, that's in Mozilla's preferences.
Right. I've been there. I saw how to do that.
Right. Go to edit preferences.
Okay, maybe this was looking me right in the face.
There you go. In addition, in those preferences, the very first choice under Navigator, you see that thing down the left there? One of the choices is Navigator. Click on that, and it says when Navigator starts up, display either a blank page, a home page, or the last page.
Wait, are we in Mozilla now?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to find what you're talking about.
Okay, if you go to the edit menu.
Oh, I found Navigator with a little steering wheel.
There you go.
Yeah.
Click Navigator.
Yeah.
And it comes up and says when Navigator starts up.
It comes up to the same thing again. Welcome to Mozilla.
Okay, I'm sorry. If you click on the edit menu, you get file, edit, view up near the top of the screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Click on the edit menu.
Mm-hmm.
Select preferences.
Okay.
Now you get a brand new window up.
Yep.
Down the left it says category, appearance, navigator, composer.
Well, I don't see category.
What do you see?
This is
appearance. I see a little white block at the left that says appearance, and then it has a...
What's under appearance?
A fishbone.
What's under appearance?
Okay. Okay, here's appearance. When Mozilla starts, open, and it's got Navigator clicked.
Right.
Checked. Okay, I think I'm getting the feel of this, what's happening here.
There you go.
I'm not
and
doing.
Then there should be another set of things under appearance. And if you read down that column far enough, you will find Navigator.
Well, Navigator's right at the top on mine.
Okay, click on Navigator.
It just takes the check mark away.
No, on the left. The white box on the left where it says appearance.
Okay, I got it. Navigator startup.
Yes.
Now I got a
yes.
dialog box labeled Navigator.
That's the one. Uh-huh. When Navigator starts up, display your home page or a blank page or the last page visited.
Okay.
On the left there it says set in Mozilla as your default browser.
Yep.
You can pick your... That's where you want to be. Go play around in there. You should be fine.
I think you guys kicked me off dead center.
We go.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much.
Sackett Cyber was founded in 1801 by Augustus Sackett of New York City.
Sure, there you go. You know, it's very tough when you're brand new to this stuff to find things. It's hard. You need to look at all the screens. You need to read all the screens. Because it's brand new. It's something different and unusual. I liken this to driving a car. If you buy a new car, you still know how to drive, but the radio's in a different place. So you spend time learning where the radio is and the lights and the turning and all that stuff. And that's what you have to do when you pick up a new browser. Spend a half an hour familiarizing yourself with what all the pieces are before you can actually get online and have as good experience as you used to have. I'm afraid we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the great Tony Placilla, the magnificent Hannah for keeping us all up on time and everything else. We'll be back here next week at our usual time, 12:20 to 2 p.m. For the folks at 1180 WHAM, I'm Nick Francesco, and we are Soundbites.